1A. Spirits in the Sand. Recent findings shed light on the lives and mysterious disappearance of the ancient Nazcar. Since their mysterious desert drawings became widely known in the late 1920s, people known as the Nazcar have puzzled archaeologists, anthropologists, and anyone else who is fascinated by ancient cultures. Their elaborate lines and figures called geoglyphs are found distributed seemingly at random across the desert outside Nazcar and the nearby town of Palpa. Waves of scientists and amateurs have come up with various interpretations for the designs. At one time or another, they have been explained as Inca roads, irrigation plans, even, controversially, landing strips for alien spacecraft. Since 1997, an ongoing Peruvian-German research collaboration called the Nazcar-Palpa Project has been putting these theories to the test. The leaders of the project are Johnny Isla and Marcus Reyendel of the German Archaeological Institute. As well as studying where and how the Nazcar lived, the researchers have investigated why they disappeared and the meaning of the strange, abstract designs they left behind. If Isla and his colleagues are right, the story of Nazcar begins and ends with water. Living on the Edge. The coastal region of southern Peru and northern Chile is one of the driest places on Earth. In the small, protected basin where the Nazcar culture arose, 10 rivers descend from the Andes. Most of these rivers are dry at least part of the year. Surrounded by 1,000 shades of brown, these 10 ribbons of green offered a fertile spot for the emergence of an early civilization. It was the perfect place for human settlement, because it had water, says geographer Bernhard Eitel, a member of the Nazcar-Palpa Project. But it was a very high-risk environment. According to Eitel and his colleague Bertel Muchtel, the microclimate in the Nazcar region has undergone considerable variation over the past 5,000 years. When a high-pressure system over central South America called the Bolivian High moves to the north, more rain falls on the western slopes of the Andes. When the high shifts southward, precipitation decreases. This causes the rivers in the Nazcar valleys to run dry. Despite the risky conditions, the Nazcar lived in the area for 8 centuries, following their appearance in about 300 BC. As the rainfall cycle continued, people moved east or west along the river valleys. In the arid southern valleys, early Nazcar engineers devised practical ways of coping with the scarcity of water. An ingenious system of horizontal wells tapped into the inclined water table as it descended from the Andean foothills. These irrigation systems, or puquios, allowed the Nazcar to bring subterranean water to the surface. The Nazcar people were, in fact, remarkably green, perhaps because of the environmental challenges they faced. The creation of the puquios displayed a sophisticated sense of water conservation, since the underground aqueducts minimized evaporation. The farmers planted seeds by making a single hole in the ground rather than plowing, thereby preserving the substructure of the soil. The Nazcar also recycled their garbage as building material. "It's a society that managed its resources very well," says Isla. This is what Nazcar is all about. Praying for water. For centuries, Andean people have worshipped the gods of mountains that feed the Nazcar drainage system. According to National Geographic explorer Johann Reinhardt, the Nazcar have traditionally associated these mountains mythologically, if not geologically, with water. Evidence for Reinhardt's thesis came in 1986 when he found the ruins of a ceremonial stone circle at the summit of Ilocata, one of the region's tallest mountains. Reinhardt believes the Nazcar lines were most likely related to worship of mountain gods because of their connection to water. Further evidence connecting Nazca rituals to water worship was revealed by the Nazca Pampa Project researchers in 2000. On a plateau near the village of Unama, Marcus Riandel made an important discovery. As he was excavating a mound, he uncovered several broken pots and other relics that clearly represented ritual offerings. Then he came upon pieces of a large seashell. It was of a genus called Spondylus. The Spondylus shell is one of the few items of Andean archaeology that has been well studied, Riandel says. It's a very important religious symbol for water and fertility. It was brought from far away and is found in specific contexts, such as funerary objects and on these platforms. It was connected in certain activities to praying for water. And it's clear in this area, water was the key issue. In 2004, archaeologist Christina Conley made a much grimmer discovery. Conley was working at a site near a dry river valley in the southern Nazca region. While excavating a Nazca tomb, she unearthed a skeleton. However, the first part to emerge from the dirt was not the skull, but the neck bones. "We could see the vertebrae sitting on top," Conley says. The person was seated, with arms crossed and legs crossed, and no head. Cut marks on the neck bones indicate the head had probably been severed by a sharp knife. A ceramic pot known as a head jar rested against the elbow of the skeleton. An illustration on the jar showed a decapitated trophy head. Out of the head grew a strange tree trunk with eyes. Everything about the burial, the head jar, the placement, and position of the body, suggest the body was disposed of in a careful manner. Conley suspects the skeleton represents a ritual sacrifice. "Although we find trophy heads spread throughout the Nazca period," she said, "there are some indications that they became more common in the middle and late period, and also at times of great environmental stress, perhaps drought. If this was a sacrifice, it was made to appease the gods, perhaps because of a drought or crop failure." Beginning of the end. Despite their offerings, the Nazca prayers would ultimately go unanswered. Water, or more precisely, its absence, was increasingly critical in the Nazca's final years, between about AD 500 and 600. In the Pampa area, scientists have traced the movement of the eastern margin of the desert about 19 kilometers, 12 miles, up the valleys between 200 BC and AD 600. At one point, the desert reached an altitude of over 1,900 meters, 6,500 feet. Similarly, the population centers around Pampa moved farther up the valleys, as if they were trying to outrun the arid conditions. At the end of the 6th century AD, Idle and Muchtel concluded in a recent paper, the aridity culminated and the Nazca society collapsed. Nevertheless, environmental stresses were not the only vital factor. "It wasn't just climate conditions that caused the collapse of Nazca culture," emphasizes Johnny Isla. "A state of crisis was provoked because water was more prevalent in some valleys than in others, and the leaders of different valleys may have been in conflict." By about AD 650, the more militaristic Wari Empire had emerged from the central highlands and displaced the Nazca as the predominant culture in the southern desert region. Almost 1,500 years later, the legacy of the Nazca lives on. You can see it in the artifacts of their ancient rituals, in the remains of their irrigation systems, and, most famously, in the lines of their mysterious desert designs. The lines surely provided a ritualistic reminder to the Nazca people that their fate was intrinsically tied to their environment. In particular, the lines represent a bond with the Nazca's most precious resource, water. You can still read their reverence for nature, in times of plenty and in times of desperate want, in every line and curve they scratched onto the desert floor. And when your feet inhabit their sacred space, even for a brief and humbling moment, you can feel it.